right, folks, we are back on the Flagstick.com Tea Talk podcast, the Open Championship wrap-up show. You get just Scotty and I for the next however long until we stop talking. Scotty, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. Tried to play some golf today, though. The weather lately, not so good.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, I work in my basement. It was bright, sunny day, and all of a sudden it's just dark, and I couldn't see down here, and this storm just came through. It was here for like 8 minutes, but it seems like you got the worst of it. Were you on the eighth hole and just got drenched?
Yeah, I was just there with a mutual friend of ours, Andy McWilliams, and trying to get in nine holes. He was down for a little visit, and yeah, just a lot of rain of late. We didn't get as much as maybe north of us. They got hammered, but certainly our golf courses locally here in this part of Ontario, Canada, have been getting a lot lately. Obviously, Toronto area, southwestern Ontario as well. So changed up the golf courses, especially for July. Everything was like hard and fast. Kind of open-like, and then now it's a little soupy out there.
Which, I mean, I don't mind right now. I have very little interest in talking, looking, swinging, feeling my golf clubs right now.
Why?
I put out a tweet. I said, my golf game should be on a milk carton right now. I have some in the last 4 weeks, my handicap has doubled. And like, it'd be cool if it's like a 2-4, right? No, we're talking like 4.5 up to a 9. I haven't been a 9 handicap, I don't know, 5 years maybe. Like, it's literally 5 years I haven't played this bad. But the worst part is, like, I feel like I'm hitting the ball better than ever. I can finally get off the tee. I don't have the tee.
Yeah.
The driver yips. It's like, can't chip. I'm not making putts. I'm getting, like, I don't even know if it's bad bounces. Like,
I saw you hit a couple of tee balls. Unfortunately, I didn't get to caddy for you this weekend, which we were hoping for.
No, we'll figure out something else.
Yeah. But, you know, your club didn't allow it, so I couldn't get to witness it. But I did get to witness you hitting a couple of really good tee shots. But apparently, on the driving range, it came after an incident that actually a few followers want to know about. They want the full story about your jump on the driving range. So you were trying to explain it to me and what you did. Why don't you tell the listeners what you did and why it was terrible?
Yeah, so I went out to the driving range, and I probably had the best range session I've had in a long time. Like, I don't think I hit a bad shot. Like, maybe one bad.
You looked fired up when I saw you.
Oh, I was feeling so good. Feeling so good. And there's like, okay, this is the last range session heading into club championship. I'm excited. Let's go. So then I was like, you know what? I got like, I get a large bucket every time, but I'll get to the end and I'll be like, I just either will hit like 50 yard shots, 70, like 3/4 wedges. Like, that's all I'll do at the last time. I'm like, you know what? Today, all I'm going to do is I'm just going to try to mash driver. Like, I'm going to try to hit them as hard as I can, swing as hard as I can. I saw some video on Instagram about like ending your session that way, as that's when you're tired, but whatever it was, right? It's almost like how you end shooting free throws after a basketball practice, right? You know, so I was like hitting them and then like, okay. And I'm like, you know what? You see guys like Bubba, you see guys, you know, on like long drive.
Justin Thomas.
You know, they jump at the ball, right? So I'm like, why don't I try that? I really feel like I'm in the backswing getting low, and then I'm going to launch myself through impact, right? And I did that, and apparently you should have spikes when you do this. I did a full 360 and fell fully onto my side. Onto my right side on a driving range that doesn't have a lot of grass, to say the least.
Sure.
I literally scratched up my leg, and there was a group of four ladies on the 10th tee. I heard them laughing. I was laughing. There was one guy in the range. He was having a horrible range session. I think he didn't even notice. But like, it's like, how many golf balls have you ever seen on the range hit? Like, maybe a mil. Do you think maybe you've seen a million golf shots in your life?
Oh, probably. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Have you ever seen anybody over the age of 10 fall over? Sorry, over the age of 10 and under the age of 70. Let's say that.
Okay. Yeah.
Literally fall over hitting a golf ball. And I did it. I did it at a bright, strong age of 31.
Usually they're not leaving their feet if they fall over. They're just kind of out of balance. I did see someone fall into a lake once, but I've never seen anyone jump up into the air, end up on their side, need probably first aid or close to it, because by the time I saw you, you were scratched up pretty
good. My leg was all red, a little bit of blood. Like, I still have a scratch. I can't say I've ever done it. I've hurt myself swinging a golf ball. Like, I gave myself like an awful groin injury one time that lingered for years. But like, I was on a side hill a lot. I've never done this.
All right. We got to hear it from the listeners too. I mean, if you want to hit us up on our Instagram at Tee Talk Podcast and tell us your story, or post something and tag us in it and tell us your wild story about the swing that you made that was going to injure yourself or somebody else. We'd love to hear them.
Most embarrassing golf swing, not result.
Right.
The swing.
Yeah. Because lots of people are going to have results. Yeah. It's the actual what happens to you because of that golf swing.
I think like the that's obviously got like number one. Like, I don't think falling over on a driving range can't be number one. But I think two would be like a whiff. Like a whiff once you become a good player.
I've seen whiffs where people fall off an elevated tee box. They get out of balance and things like that. But I mean, short of watching Fail Army, which you should have been taping.
A lot of people asked when I was taping. I it's funny because I actually have thought about like taping some swings. Can you imagine if it was on video?
That would have been amazing.
I think we'd have to cancel the podcast.
Maybe. They probably lose faith in what your ability is to talk about golf. That's for sure.
Yeah. But I had club championship on the weekend. It didn't go well. My golf game, as I mentioned, should be on a milk carton. I'm leaving the clubs alone for a week. I got like a fun round coming up with some buddies that like they don't break 90. They're just looking to have a good time. So go do that. Won't feel that bad about my game that day. Just have some fun. And then you and I are heading up to visit our boys up at Titleist next week. We're going to go Beacon Hall. And hopefully by then I've fallen in love with my own golf game. But I think I watched the Open on Sunday in the best way possible. So as I mentioned, we had a club championship. The Open was on Sunday as well, right in the middle of it. So my boy Reed and I, we were paired in a group together because we both sucked the first day. And we brought
Is that my fault? I think you took a lesson on Friday.
He was hitting his irons well. He had a lesson with you. He was hitting his irons well. Didn't get where he needed to go. We had the iPad out there in the cart. We streamed the whole round.
Cool.
And it made a great Sunday, even though I sucked. I sucked.
Does it really throw you off? I don't know about you, but the Open week really throws me off because you get up early, days get sort of broken up, sometimes sneak a nap in. Like, the days feel like the longest days in the world. Like, 24 hours feels like 36. And I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but, I love it as far as the Open. But, I mean, I'm so thrown off by the time Sunday night comes. It feels like the previous 4 days have been, like, 10 days.
Yeah, my wife was getting on my case, too. Like, I'd get up at, like, 5 a.m. and start watching. I was knocking up, like, 3 a.m. and watching the first groups. By the time you get up, like, coverage ended at like 3 p.m. most days. Like, you could still watch so much golf without getting up that early. I was getting up around 5, but the best part for me is like, we got our little guy, right, and he naps 5 times a day, so I would take those afternoon ones, and then I'm catching a little shut eye myself. So
love it.
It worked out perfectly. Sunday obviously caught it in a new way, and caught Colin Morikawa picking up his first Open Championship in his first start. Guy that neither one of us drafted last week,
because even though I pick him pretty much every week, and for some reason I didn't, dummy.
No, but I picked up another bottle of wine. I think the joke is starting to become reality that anytime people owe me anything, they should just bill you for it at this point, because I just keep you may as well buy me an LCBO soon. What were your thoughts? What were your thoughts about the whole, let's just start with Colin Morikawa. And we're going to get into our week that was, and I don't know how much we're getting into him during that, but like, just Morikawa, his game, and just the overall championship from start to finish.
Yeah, you know what? Always excited about the Open. The fact that it was returning after 2 years certainly created a little bit more excitement. The fact that there were 30,000 plus fans there every day, again, that sort of played into it. It finally felt to me like there was sort of a sense of normalcy in golf. That's what it sort of felt like for me. His play, you know what? He obviously didn't look at any point that he was going to throw this away. I mean, it looked like that obviously, Spieth might catch him or Oosthuizen might kind of come back. But once he got his teeth into it, it looked like just a march. So there wasn't a lot of extra excitement to it, which I think, maybe made it a little duller than it could have been. And I think that, I think the weather probably contributed to that. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit, but, the golf course itself is a little disconcerting. I mentioned that to you. I played it on the TrackMan. It was available on the TrackMan, and it was kind of weird because you it's one of those golf courses that has a lot of blind shots. You stand on a tee and you look out and you don't know where you're aiming. So I can imagine for the players as well, that's probably why a lot of them, maybe don't fall in love with this golf course just because it has that sort of sense to it. So it is a different golf course, and I don't think it's extra memorable. I couldn't tell you right now off the top of my head, one hole.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, can you give me a reminder of one hole that stood out all week? They all kind of mash together.
Yeah, which I think is part of the reason why it just doesn't become a distinctive location, despite the fact, obviously they've had the Open here and they've hosted since 1894, and I get the history of the place and so forth, but it just is not a standout property for me from a visual standpoint. Although, I love the drone shots that they had, and, that adds a lot to it. And I think if they didn't have those, if it was back the old days where it was ground cameras, it'd be a terrible visual on TV for sure. So, while it was great to have everything back, and obviously a deserving winner, I certainly wouldn't put it, in the high ranks of past Opens, and certainly compared to, say, Portrush, 2 years ago, that was definitely a different Open than that one.
Yeah, if we even just go through, the last 10 years, and we'll just go, I'm just going to go through quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
Morikawa year just happened. Lowry year, you think about Shane Lowry winning in Ireland, the excitement of that. The weather was insane. Him having that big stroke lead. There were so many storylines. The year before, Molinari wins. Tiger's right in the mix. He hadn't won that major. Right in the mix. He's finally back. Is he going to get that win again?
Carnoustie itself is, so distinctive. Yeah.
Carnoustie, the year before, Jordan Spieth picks up his third major. The storylines around there. How many is this guy going to get? Yada, him. Just his exciting golf throughout that. Henrik Stenson, finally. Stenson gets one, right? The ball striker he is. He finally, everything comes together 1 week. We're going to skip 2015. I don't want to talk about it. I won't talk about it. 2014, Rory McIlroy. It's Rory.
Yeah.
Picks up his third, his fourth. He's on that hot. Phil, Ernie, Derek. Those are all, and then this one just, there's nothing memorable about it to me outside of
Morikawa winning.
When I look back at it, there's two things I'll think about. I'll think about Morikawa, his just steady play, and he just chipped away all week. And then I think what for me, and that's where I'm going to start with my bogey of the week is Louis, another one where it's right there. And I get it. Majors are really hard to win. Yeah. And I think Data Golf, at the best point, the no laying up guy said his best point, he had two holes where he had a 50% chance of winning. 50% chance of winning. And he led up until his third hole of the day on Sunday?
Yeah.
I was almost willing myself to say this guy's going to win. I was on when I was playing my buddy Reed. I was like, it's his time. And Reed from how did he tee off? He's like, no, he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. Cause what makes us think he's going to do it? He's on a tear that we haven't seen since Ricky Fowler did the same thing. And it's devastating because it's Louis. You want to root for him, but I mean, he made $4 million this year. Majors, I think.
Yeah, he's done okay. Yeah. You know what though? Here's an interesting point, and I want to ask it of you because obviously we've talked a fair bit about Morikawa and some of his his assets, but also some of his weaknesses as well. If this was an Open Championship where the green speeds were a little faster. Do you think Louis would have prevailed over Morikawa? I mean, I'm looking at it and seeing Morikawa and obviously the issues that he has sometimes with some of the shorter putts. I think the slower green speeds here allow him to be a little bit more firm with those putts, not as tentative as he can normally get with some of the shorter ones. And although Louis obviously has, you know, turned around his game and leaned really hard on his putting overall, I think this ended up playing into Morikawa's hands because of the green speeds and less because of the ball striking.
Well, that the hardest part with that is, where does the ball striking balance out?
Right.
Putting, right? Yeah. Obviously, Louis is an elite putter and Colin's an elite ball striker. And Louis is a great ball striker too. Let's not forget that either.
Oh, no, for sure.
But yeah, like Colin, like we might be, and I'm not, we're not going down. I'm sure. I haven't looked in the mailbag. Did somebody ask how many is he going to get? No. Great. Thank you.
And I think we've had that question eight times already. So,
well, yeah. I'm not going to go down that road, but like we might be witnessing like greatness in ball striking for a while here. And now this happens a lot, right? Remember like when Rory had four, we're like, he's going to get 10, he's going to get, he's going to get 12, right? Like these things tend to fizzle out and there'll be 4 years where Morikawa doesn't pick up much and he has something go wrong. Like it happens to the best of them.
But that's like, why I also are concerned about Morikawa when you look at events like the Masters and the US Open, where there tends to be excessive green speeds. I wonder if his game can handle that as far as from that end of the his skill level.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I actually agree with you. I think he's, if they were faster, I don't think he's in where he should be. Did you hurt yourself all of a sudden?
My hamstring cramped up all of a sudden. First injury on the podcast, and I didn't jump to try to hit the microphone.
It looked like this guy just fell off his chair. Old man just pulls his old man pulls hamstring sitting.
Old man pulls hamstring.
That's impressive. So no, I actually agree with you. I don't know if it helps Louis if the surfaces are harder by any means, but I don't think it's where Colin. I think the conditions were as perfect as they needed to be for Colin Morikawa to win, and that's where I gave my bogey, and I'm going to go for my second one. That's where I'm giving my par this week. Is like, this is the tournament outside the Masters where I get so excited for, and I think if we didn't wait so long for the Masters, I think the Open would probably be ahead of it. And each year where I just think it's so different. It's so different.
Yeah.
And this year I felt like I was told I was going to get one thing and I got like,
you got the John Deere of the Opens.
Yeah. Like I ordered a pizza and like, I got a pepperoni and it was good. But like, I wanted a few more topics and I didn't get the wind. I didn't get the rain. Remember that question? Like, when was the last time the Open didn't have rain? Well, now we have an answer. It was 2020.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that played into it. I mean, nobody was expecting that, you know, high 20s. It wasn't looking like a California day.
Nicest days of sandwich UK in history, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you said it, you know, no chaos, right? I mean, there really wasn't chaos. And usually that chaos is caused by, you know, high winds or rain or, you know, that's the aspect that I guess a lot of people expect from the Open, even for one day. One day. That's all we need to really mix things up.
Like, if it was Sunday.
Yeah.
Here's like, and we're never going to be able to prove it. But like, I would say if it's Sunday, we're looking at John Rahm as the champion.
Ooh.
With the way he played on Sunday, him and Brooks, like I think it's those two guys that if it got chaotic on Sunday, that those two guys would have been. Now that's just a theory and I'm never able to prove it. But there's something there where I mean, Louis, the best of conditions or the worst of conditions, he's choking because that's just what he does right now.
Right.
But at Morikawa, like, you know, can he still hit it to the middle of the green on every shot and have like literally nothing to worry about his whole round, basically? Yeah. I don't know.
Yes, and you know, this was a golf course where they really needed to control their shots coming in, and you know, with the humps and bumps and the rumpled features around the greens, and they didn't come into play because there wasn't, you know, those winds. But one thing that where it wasn't rumpled and bumpy was when Morikawa made a speech, which is my birdie for the week. I mean, you know, no offense to Martin Slumbers, the RNA, but Morikawa could have been just the MC for everything, because how he handled that afterwards was classy as hell. And I think everybody was pretty proud watching that, despite, you know, a few people going on about the fact he said the British Open and a few other things. Whatever the case, it was a well-delivered speech. It was a speech that you wouldn't expect from somebody who is so young. And, you know, in that moment, you know, he's winning the Open Championship of the world, his second major. And you know, he certainly took care of the speech nicely afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know what else you can say. I think he knows the history. He's a good kid. I think I can guarantee you less alcohol will be going in that Claret jug than went in in the first year Shane Lowry had it, sure. Or the second year, because yeah. He had it for 2 years.
Or per week, who knows?
Yeah, so I think it'll be a different celebration with Morikawa. But I agree with you. An honorable champion, one that, you know, I think we're proud to have. And we're going to get into it later about, you know, the last, like, these 4 year stretch, or sorry, these four major stretch, we have good, great stories throughout. We're going to go over it. We did the last decade, where we're going to kind of pick outside of this one, what other ones stand out to you the most? We'll get to that later. But I agree with you. I think that's a good birdie. What's your par for the week? I gave my par of the Open overall, you know, just not enough chaos. What about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that was really about the golf course, and we you know, Royal St. George's was just missing something. And that's back to exactly what we were talking about. You know, the history is there. You know, the buildup is there, I guess, as far as the area being historic and so forth. But there's just not something distinctive enough about this course. And I wish that, you know, it was more distinctive, because I think if you have the golf courses within the rota, you sort of hope that there's not always a, you know, a blemish here and there. You always hope it's all stars all the way through and being the best products. And I guess, you know, given the history of the place and other things, you know, politically, obviously they make it part of the rotation, but I don't think it was universally loved by the players. I don't think it's one where they were all excited going, oh, wow, we're back to Royal St. George. I mean, they might've been more excited to get into the area to go play Prince's or St. Port's or something else. But I don't think necessarily it was for the golf course itself. So, you know, as great as the Open is, and it's still my favorite major championship, it was just missing something overall.
I agree. The coverage, though, we'll give them credit. It was good. I thought they did good things. I thought and it's just a feeling. I feel like they front loaded the commercials. Felt like there was a less commercials. There was less playing through all that nonsense. I think the world feeds helped. I love the morning.
World feeds are amazing. Yeah,
the morning was so good. Yeah. Because they didn't have the usual guys on there. You got the Sky Sports feed guys. And gals early, I felt. And the comments they make are just so much better than than the American broadcasters. Yeah. Like the one comment they made about Tommy Fleetwood's hat, that if you scanned it with your phone, it would open up a web page. I was dying. It was so good. I forget who it was. It was the female broadcaster for Sky Sports. Yeah. If I could watch Sky Sports every single week, I would. Yeah. What were your thoughts on the coverage overall?
Yeah, I listened to a lot of the radio coverage through the app, which was, again, it was the same thing. And, you know, obviously...
that coverage.
Yeah, but it really
lines up to the ball. He puts his left hand on the club. His right hand is in the claw format. He lines up. He pulls it back. Oh, he misses. I had to turn it off in the car. So I was going to crash. Yeah, I was going to fall asleep.
But it's a visual theater of them describing the scene. And I guess, you know, it's more nostalgia more than anything, and going back to the, you know, the Peter Allis stuff. And obviously they paid tribute to Gordon Brand, who passed away after the Open in 19. And but I mean, you're right. It's the phrases and the terminology, and it's the stuff that you don't hear. I mean, we hear some of the same phraseology every week on the PGA Tour, you know, and that's part of my bogey of the week of Paul Azinger. Like, get him off my TV. It's just the same crap over and over again. But, you know, listening to a commentator describe a fairway as an unmade duvet is what it looked like. I mean, it's just stuff like that where you're like, damn, that's good. You know, I mean, you know, all of a sudden in your mind, you have this look and this vision of what's actually in front of you. And you're like, yeah, that's good. It's not the same. Oh, it's a tumbling fairway or it's, you know, rumpled or whatever. Yeah. So I love that. I love that different aspect to it. And again, that's just, you know, use of language more than anything. And certainly if you're in the UK, you might say, well, that's what we hear all the time, but it was refreshing. And I'd love to see the flip, like you said, and see the Sky Sports coverage of PGA Tour. You know, obviously Rich Beam gets on there. So they do have some American stuff in there and Butch Harmon in there as well, but just for something different, just to be a little bit more refreshing, because, you know, frankly, as I said, you know, Azinger, who's supposed to be the analyst, I mean, he was so off the mark with so many remarks. It was unbelievable, you know, and again, no offense to, you know, our boy, Corey Connors, but Paul Azinger going on about, you know, what a great putter he is. Yet, you know, if you look at his strokes gain stats, and then, you know, obviously he misses the short one on the first hole right away. It just looks like Azinger is there for name only and fails to do any research. And if you're going to be an analyst, I mean, you know, you've got a duty to provide something of context to it that's actually truthful and factual, not just throwing it out there and hoping that it sticks.
And the other thing about it is like, and if you're not going to do that, people have to like you, and no one liked him before.
Yeah, that's true too.
So like, what are they doing with him now? I think he's a one and done contract, I think, from my perspective. I hope so as well. I'm going to give a different birdie this week. People are probably going to be like, how? Why? I'm giving a birdie to Rory McIlroy. I think he had a great week off the golf course. On the golf course, he started, and I got way too excited on Thursday. And then on the front nine, they looked great. And I was like, maybe he's back. And the back nine wasn't. But the reason I'm giving a birdie is what he said off the golf course a couple different times. The first time they asked him about, like, are you trying too hard in these things? And he went down the road of like, you know, like, I have a great family. I got everything I need. I get to play golf for a living. No, I'm not trying too hard, which I think some people took it the wrong way. I'm actually going to take it as a positive of like, you know, this is a stretch for him in his life where golf isn't number one. Yeah. And he's still got the greatest swing, still makes a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's not going to be what everyone wanted him to be. But I think he's what he wants to be now, and that's all that really matters. But on top of that, I'm actually giving him a birdie for the answer he gave about the Olympics. Mm. And people are going to be like, what do you mean? And he basically said, like, he's not that patriotic about the Olympics. He's going to grow the game of golf. Yeah. And I'm giving him a birdie out of empathy. It's not an actual birdie for him. I'm giving him a birdie because there's nothing else he could have said there. He cannot say he's going to represent Ireland and he's so excited to represent Ireland because he's not actually from Ireland. He's from Northern Ireland. Yep. And he's been forced to choose between Northern Ireland and Ireland, which we're not experts on it, but I can tell you from both people that have spent time there, it's not an easy choice. It's very difficult. History, like, look up last year, there was still bombs going off in Northern Ireland, you know, people getting killed in Northern Ireland for.
Yeah, I mean, there was a journalist killed there the week and a half before I traveled over there 2 years ago. So, I mean, it's you're right. I mean, he is limited of what he can say, but at least what he said was truthful. Yeah, and he didn't wrap it up in, you know, a gold ribbon and made it, you know, all polished up so everybody would like it in a certain way. He just said what he felt. And that's continues to be why he is, you know, one of the greatest interviews in sport.
Yeah. And I feel for a guy. I get he has so much money, but I'll never be able to relate to what he's going through on a decision like that. To be able to come out and do what he's saying, he's saying he's focusing just to grow out the game of golf. I will say this, there is I'm going to say he doesn't meddle. I do not see him meddling.
No, here's the thing. Politics aside, I think there is a number of athletes, and we're probably going to see it now before it starts. We're still going to probably see more withdrawals because we're mm-hmm. seeing right now, you know, there is certainly a situation in Japan. We're seeing athletes that are testing positive in the village. And, you know, the situation is not great there as far as their vaccination rates. I would say part of the hesitancy for some of these athletes and the fact they're not excited is great. It's the Olympics, you know, it's the greatest stage for sports in the world. But currently, I don't know if it's the beacon of hope that it traditionally is. And as a result of it, you know what, this person is having to make this obligation for a country when they have to sacrifice their personal health and needs, their family as well, to make this journey over. So that said, don't be surprised in the next week or so that we don't see a few more withdrawals.
Yeah, that worries me with him then. Like, because yeah, he's one I would be very worried about, and I wouldn't blame him to do it.
No, not one bit.
Like a guy like Bryson won't be there. Is Patrick Reed in the Olympics?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, like a guy like Patrick Reed, like those guys will go, right? But Rory, I could see calling it. There's so much going on. Like Mel Reed, for example, had to drop out of the Evian Championship this week because you can't go to France and then come back to England regardless of vaccinations. I don't know where she stands on those, and I don't really care right now. But she couldn't even come back to England to then go to the Olympics. So now she has to choose to stay at home.
Sorry, Reed is not in there. It doesn't look like. So.
Oh, it might be at the, who knows? Like, he might get there.
He might be by now.
Yeah. So it's a weird situation. But overall, I'm giving a birdie to Rory.
Yeah.
I feel for the guy. I really hope he can find some peace there in a history with those two countries that really, you know, there hasn't been much of that in their history. Why don't you finish up with your honorable mention? And then I got one too. And then we got a bunch of different stuff we're going to go through. We're going to play role play again. We haven't done that in a while.
Been a while.
We're going to go over, we're going to rank the majors from this year. So the big year, there were 7 of them. Yeah. We got the mailbag to get into. Maybe we'll talk about the tournaments this week. Probably not. And then you will wrap it up. But why don't you hit your honorable mention before we wrap up the week that was?
Yeah, I was just happy for the LPGA Tour. You know, the final round of the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational was on CBS, which is nice to see because, man, short of the majors, we do not see network coverage of the LPGA Tour, unfortunately. And it was just nice to be able to turn it on. I know, I get it. The Open was on and, you know, that probably left some space open. But certainly even for this being a pairs event, it got more eyeballs on the tournament. And it was just nice to see major network covering LPGA golf.
Yeah, I would love to see them opposite. Like if NBC's hosting one week, why can't CBS take the lead the other week? Obviously, there's other things going on and networks and ratings. But I think it was nice. I did tune over a little bit in between my Sunday afternoon nap with the kid, but it was nice to check out the ladies. I'm going to finish up with my honorable mention, and then I'm going to ask you a question.
All right. So my I love your honorable mention.
I was watching prior to coming on here, Golf Films has a great film on the Golf Channel. Go and record it. It's called St. Andrews, the greatest golf story ever told, and goes over the whole history of St. Andrews, the city, the golf course, the start, the history of the RNA, the history of the museum, the caddies, like everything. Yeah. You've spent a lot of time there. I was lucky to spend, you know, a full day there, just one full day there. And I feel like, I'm not going to lie, I was looking at real estate just to be like, could we do this? Like, why not move there? And to be honest with you, you and I were talking about, let's do a trip there. Maybe you and I should talk about buying this apartment that I found there. It was a 2-bedroom apartment. It was around 120 euros, or would it be the pound, wouldn't it?
It would be the pound. It would be on offer for that because they open it up and then basically it's a competition based on that.
Sure, but I'm just thinking, if we rent that, we might get our money back just by renting it the next year for the Open.
Interesting.
You know, maybe we should talk off air about a little investment opportunity here, Scotty. But this was amazing. It got me so excited for next year. You and I have to come up with some way to get to St. Andrews next year at some point. The Open, I'm sure we could get media credentials to go there. If somebody has a place for us to stay, we will come. But it just got me so excited. It's a beautiful, beautiful city with so much history. If you can record it, do it. And you'll want to go just as much as I want to go for next year for the 150th Open.
Yeah, I think if people watch it, what they'll realize is that it's not just about golf. You know, it's about life in that town and, you know, how golf, I guess, is built into the fabric of it. But it's just a really unique place. And, you know, as you said, you got to spend a day there. But, you know, the longer you spend there every single day, the more you fall in love with the place. And whether it's, you know, going to a Starbucks that was built in the 1700s, the building was, or, you know, hey, let's wander down to St. Rule Tower and walk up that. Well, guess what? That was built in 1100. And just the way the people are, they're certainly welcoming, the location by the sea. And again, you know, if you are a golfer, I mean, man, you know, the pub life, the golf life, it just, there's so much to it. And the film captured it very, very well, which can be hard to do because, you know, a lot of times it could just end up being something really cheesy, but they really worked the real feel of it from the people standpoint, which was really neat. And I think the people are more the story there than anything else.
You nailed it on the word feel. Ooh. And I felt what I felt when I was there. Yes. That's a perfect word. I'm going to leave it there. Go and watch it. All right. 100 tomato score on Rotten Tomatoes for me. So I'm going to ask you this, and we're going to wrap up the week that was, and we'll take a quick break. We'll hit up role play after the break. 150th Open, we wrapped up this week. You got to pick a winner for next year at St. Andrews. Right now, who do you think is your winner next year at St. Andrews?
I'll take Louis again. You know, he's in the mix. You know, he has won there. He has finished. I'll just take him. I think it's a safe one. But, you know, I think there's an extra element there. There's an extra gear that happens at that Open. Would I like to see him do it? Not necessarily. It may have been somebody else, but I think he's a good bet for sure.
Wow, Louis. I'm going with a guy that cares about the history of golf, I think, more than anyone else that is currently playing.
Ben Crenshaw is going to win.
I like
that. Oh, currently. Oh, okay.
So that is still currently playing. And that's Jordan Spieth. I think he showed he's got the game for the Open again.
Yeah.
I think his game's getting there. It's going to get close. I don't think there's anybody, and it sounds crazy, I don't think there's anybody outside of maybe Tiger Woods coming back and that whole story, if he went, which like, can just quickly, like, we're not going to go into that, but I would, let's hope that Tiger's back next year. But that storyline going to that Open at St. Andrews, like, where his game's at, like, that's going to be crazy. We're not going to get into that. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
No, I like that thought as far as Spieth. And he talked about it, you know, he talked about it in that film, and he talked about going over and going to Scotland for the first time when he was 13 years old and his connection to the place and why it became important to him. So certainly I think he would be a fitting winner. I think he'd be a memorable winner. And I think he'd be a suitable winner considering the legacy of the Open Championship at St. Andrews and the fact that, you know, the greats of the game have won there, short of Zach Johnson.
I'm not doing it.
But so many of the greats have won there, and, you know, the script has played out. So, you know, Spieth would certainly be one where the script would play out.
Louis is a great pick.
Although he does have one there already, so.
He does, but he almost had two.
Yeah, true.
And Zach Johnson had to ruin that for all of us. So he has come, only one player has technically beat him in the last, whatever 72 times two is, 144 plus the three playoff holes he played that one year.
Yeah.
You know, 147 holes at St. Andrews. One player's beat him, and it happened to be that dingus Zach Johnson, but I digress. Why don't we grab a quick break? Let's hit some role play. It's been a while. Can't wait to do this. We're going to talk some Bryson role play. We're going to talk some RNA. Who knows what else? We're going to break down the last seven major championships. We're going to come to a consensus order. We're going to hit the mailbag. We got a lot more. Let's grab a quick break. We'll be right back. All All right, Scotty. What do we want to do? Do we want to just wrap up a bow on major season first and then hit some role play afterwards? Because there's some major talk in the role play, but and obviously some open talk. But why don't we let's wrap up major season? And here's the idea that you came up with. Why don't you tell me exactly what we need to accomplish within the next 10 minutes or so? Hit it. Give it to me. What do we got to do?
So obviously we've had the most intense major season in men's golf that we've ever seen. And, you know, the fact is that we've had seven men's majors in a very short period of time. We're now going to be on a break until the Masters come next April before we get one again. But looking back and knowing that we sat on this podcast and talked about how lucky we were to have so many majors in the men's side happening in the next little while, it's trying to decide where they rank as far as all time and even within those seven, which was the best, which was our favorites within those major championships, because certainly we had a little bit of everything from all sorts of different players and sometimes, you know, the same player twice. But, you know, what was the one that stood out for you the most? And maybe we'll try to figure out, and as you said, come to some sort of consensus as far as what the best one was and work our way down the list.
Let's start at the bottom. I think it will be harder.
Easier, actually.
Yeah. I think it's going to be harder and make it really more fun. So let's start at the bottom. What's number seven for you?
Number seven for me? Man, I'm going to say seven for me was probably Bryson winning the U.S. Open. I think there was a lot of hype around it. Wingfoot, I think, was just, you know, while it is a spectacular golf course, I think it didn't let anyone in too much. It just basically destroyed players with the rough the way it was. Matt Wolf sort of tried to make it exciting. But, you know, and hey, you know what? I'm happy for Bryson, get your U.S. Open win or whatever. But I just don't know if it had, I just don't know if it had all the elements that was exciting. That I expected. And I think Bryson, we expected him sort of to win a little bit. So maybe that's a little bit of it. It wasn't a surprise. And I just don't think that I don't think the golf course allowed a lot of players in there to play well.
Do you think DJ's Masters win has an argument for the worst?
Well,
see, this is what's going to be difficult. It could be number two for you, okay, for all I know.
Yeah, no. But that was the one I was actually looking at. And the only reason, I mean, one, it was a victory march where there wasn't a lot of competition. So that made it dull, right? Yeah. But I think the fact that it was DJ and it was the one he was supposed to win that he hadn't won, and his emotion at the end and how we finally saw the guy who, you know, has basically been mocked by a lot of people and doesn't show a lot of emotion, gives a lot of one word answers. And this dude was choked up and we saw how much it really meant to him and how much golf really meant to him when a lot of people suspected that, nah, this guy is just so talented. He's out there making checks and he doesn't really care. So I think the golf itself was probably worse than what Bryson did to Wingfoot, because obviously we have to, you know, we have to respect the fact that, you know, he was deeper under par and nobody else was, as far as Bryson, you know, being where he was at, and a lot of players were all over par. But I think the excitement of the golf basically was outshone by the emotion at the end and the fact that seeing DJ in a green jacket was what we wanted. I think a lot of people wanted.
Yeah. So I'll agree with you on Bryson being seven. I think it was boring. I think they set the course up horribly. Literally the only guy that was probably going to win would be him because nobody hit a fairway anyway. So if nobody's going to hit a fairway, the guy that's going further than everybody has a wedge in his hand is going to win. It was boring. He putt great, whatever. And he nobody likes him, but you got like, are we in agreement on that Masters being six?
I would go with that. I would make that an easy six for that Masters.
And I think the only reason I'd bump it up is what you talked about afterwards is that you kind of brought it back up in my head is that DJ showing the emotion, cracking up afterwards, him and his brother literally holding back tears on the 18th green, all of that. Like, and let's remember, we're ranking the top seven tournaments of the last year, right? Yeah. Outside the players, right? Which you could probably put that maybe in there, and maybe we should ask if it ranks higher than any of these afterwards. Right now, I would probably put it ahead of Bryson.
A number of them, for sure.
Yeah. But, okay, I'll agree. If you're good with DJ at six, I agree. Yeah,
for sure.
Where are you going with five right now?
You know what? Five, I'm actually going to go with Morikawa's first win. You know, despite the fact that it was his first major, cool beans being in San Francisco, you know, as far as Harding Park, but no spectators really. So, you know, it made it a little bit dull that way. Obviously, he drove that green. That was a cool sort of finish. But for me, the PGA always struggles as it is. So that one felt a little duller for me. So what about you? Where would you go for number five?
It's like, I'm trying so hard not to let the fans not being there pull me, because it's pulling me. And I think you're making a good argument here. And I'm trying to be like, hey, let's make this a radio show and fight the other way, so we have something hard, good here. But I don't think I can, because that's exactly what I think about. When he hit that shot to, 4 feet on the drivable par four, which is like the 15th, 16th hole, whatever it was. And, like, if there were fans there, it would have been chaotic. Mm. It would have been unbelievable. We didn't really know what to expect at a TPC Harding Park. And then we get a fanless TPC Harding Park. Yeah. It wasn't even grandstands up. They had these ropes that weren't even, like, it was very odd.
The ropes for nobody.
Yeah, the ropes for nobody. I'm trying to fight it, but I can't.
Well, what other one would you put in there that's near there? I mean, obviously,
I don't want to give them away yet. So I'm just going to agree with you on it. Of the three, I will agree with the ranking of those three no fan tournaments. Right. And then maybe I'll start four, because I think this is where we're going to start getting into some arguments.
I'm trying to stay away from recency bias as well, because obviously we have more emotional tie to the ones that happened in 21, but we still have to compare them and think about how we felt after those ones are over. And, you know, maybe what we do is we're looking back here now with, you know, a different lens than, you know, if we went back and listened to the shows that we did immediately after them and our hype over certain moments. But, you know, this is just how we feel sort of right now. Is this, you know, legitimate? No, it's just how we feel within these few minutes.
That's fair, yeah. And then if you asked me tomorrow or like next week,
it might be different, right?
I wouldn't even know. My next one, I'm actually going to, for four, and you can try to argue against me, I'm going with Hideki. And I know I didn't love the Open this week. And that's where I'm kind of between, is those two. I'm going with Hideki because he kind of came out of nowhere. He's very robotic. It was of all of these, if we actually were to rank it, what was the biggest one? That was the biggest win of all of them. Like what that did for Japan and all of that, like from a media standpoint, like what we see in the States, it meant nothing to what that is. That guy is going to be a god when we come to the Olympics. He's going to be carrying the torch, right? Like it's going to be, or the flag, whatever one it is. It's going to be insane. But I just don't look back at it with the same allure as the clear top two here.
Yeah, well, here's something to think about from a memorable standpoint. Who else was in the mix in that one?
Will Zalatoros was second.
Exactly.
That's the other part for me. Exactly. Where and I didn't even have to look that one up.
I know. Right?
It's just like, I don't know who was third. Brian Hart. Oh, my. No, that was first. Day, sorry.
Schauffele and Spieth.
Schauffele choked it away.
But you wouldn't even know about that. Like, this became important because of the winner and what the implications are for that winner, rather than the tournament itself, which, that sways us one way or the other, because sometimes when you think about a major and how it happens, there are a lot of exciting moments, and I'm sure we're going to get to that in a minute here. That's what makes it exciting versus, oh, well, that guy won it. Here's the reasons he won it. That makes it good. I think he needs the whole package if it's going to rank that much higher.
Yeah, so I mean, where are you at? Which, I would assume it's between this Open in that previous one. So even if we, I know I'm sticking with the Masters. Like if we look at it, come Saturday at the end of the round, Hideki had a 4-stroke lead. For him to lose that was going to take like a lot. He was in the mix all the way. Like the first 2 days, Brian Harman's up there. Justin Rose was like the biggest pretender ever up there. Like he's not even on here. Like come Sunday, whereas I guess he finished seventh. Yeah, like I got it at fourth. You're going to have to sway me on this one.
I'm going to have a hard time doing that because I was flipping back and forth between Morikawa and Hideki as far as Morikawa PGA and Hideki for those two. So, you know, I'm right with you. Sad as that is, you know, we hoped for an argument, but I think we have an easy consensus on those ones.
All right. So we'll go Hideki 4, Morikawa his open at 3. We've already broken it down. I'm not going through it again. This might get interesting. This might get interesting. I actually don't think it will. Why? I think number one, let's just both say it. We'll go 3-2-1, say the name. And I think it'll be obvious, but 3-2-1, Phil.
Phil. and you know what? And it goes back to exactly what I just said. It's the fact of one, not only the winner itself and the implications of the winner. And in this case, obviously, you know, the age of that winner and where it ranks as far as his career, but the tournament itself and how that final day broke down and how we were on the edge of our seat, literally. That's what makes the majors that are great even greater are the ones that you, man, I don't know what's going to happen here the whole day, not going, oh, this guy's got a 4-stroke lead and, you know, he just choked it away at the end. No, you know, we got a bunch of players that are in the mix here. We got hole outs. We got exciting shots. We got drama. We have all sorts of things. We have big crowd at the end. We have big speeches. There's so much to it from an element standpoint that, you know, I think it would just be hard to argue for anyone unless they had a personal tie to one of these players.
No, I agree. John, it's not that the US Open was bad. If you look at when they were on the ninth hole on Sunday, Bryson DeChambeau was the winner. Like people were probably, they're handing him that trophy. So it got chaotic on that back nine on Sunday.
It did.
But I think the difference is Phil being the winner. It just changed something. I think Tiger getting one, you know, 2 years prior, you know, nobody would have thought that we were ever going to see both of them still win. I was calling him a mascot. I said he was going to miss the cut. But the John Rahm one is great. The storyline coming into that, too. Think about that. Yeah. Just fresh off of, you know, the WD at the Memorial when he was easily going to win it. Yeah. You know, gets in like earlier than we thought he was going to get into it. Like, such a good story. Like, I think it's closer. And that if it, say it was Brooks, I think we flip. If Brooks ends up winning on Sunday at the PGA and beats Phil, I think Rahm is one and Brooks is probably two.
Yeah. 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 I agree. Totally. I think there's just too many elements at play into the Phil aspect of it. And I think when you mention about the chaos, chaos is ranked higher if the chaos is players going back and forth. The chaos is not a player shooting 44 on the back nine, you know, blowing two tires and going off the cliffside. That's got nothing to do with it or whatever. It's got to be the chaos has got to be created by the players going back and forth and lead changes and, you know, not knowing how things are going to play out and the drama building the whole way. And again, going back to the saying, basically, you know, it's got to play out like a script, really, is what it does. And, you know, if you sat there at the start of the week and what's the improbable thing that could happen that would be amazing, not many people are writing that Phil is going to be winning. Certainly you weren't.
No. I mean, if you bet Phil to win, you're rich.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was like 301 odds to win. Yeah. Like, it was insane.
Nobody was picking him besides maybe his agent, So I think that's probably what it made it more improbable. And I think there was just a lot of elements to it from a history standpoint. And again, it's not about, you know, loving Phil or anything. I think it's just how it fits in the whole narrative of golf history.
I agree. Overall, though, I think 2021 was a pretty awesome year for majors, right? Yeah. Matsuyama, like we ranked it pretty low, but like that's a huge one. Phil is insane. Like we're like ramping up. Rom Morikawa picks up his second. Outside of 2021, if we look at the last 10 years, what's the best one for you?
It's probably when I looked at the set of them, and it has to be kind of all four. I liked 19. 19 for a couple of reasons. Obviously, Lowry winning that narrative of winning in Ireland, you know, having the Open for the first time back there since 51 in Northern Ireland. And you know, that was a big storyline. Woodland, the US Open, obviously a guy of immense talent. Granted, being at Pebble Beach probably enhanced that one, but you know, even that shot the pitch shot he hit on 17 where he chipped off the green, those things were memorable for me. And then, you know, and then Koepka and Woods. I mean, so, you know, that's a great set of four without really much of a weakness. And maybe the only weakness in there is Woodland. And I don't think of that much as a weakness because a lot of people were excited to see him win that because, you know, from an aspect of, yeah, he wins the US Open and he's an American lad. So, it's a good
one. I think when people think of that as a weakness now, they forget what Gary Woodland was in 2015, 2016.
Right.
Gary Woodland is what Brooks kept, what we thought, Brooks Koepka is what we thought Gary Woodland was going to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
That big, strong guy.
Dominant.
Dominant is going to come out and just dominate. Injuries got in his way and amongst other things. And and obviously Brooks comes out, picks up, that would have been his last major he won in 2019. I believe Brooks will get another one or two here.
Oh,
but Tiger obviously picking up his 15th. Like, it's so hard not to pick that a year with Tiger in it.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of good ones, and I think you've picked the best one. The next closest one for me was 2017, where it was Spieth winning at the Open, Koepka winning his second major, I believe. Oh, no, his first major. Like, a lot of people saw Brooks coming at that point. He was playing really well. Then we didn't know what was going to happen.
Not at all. Yeah.
He was pretty quiet still. Justin Thomas kind of expected, but you know, young cat, finally he gets his first. And I think people thought he would have been where Brooks was now, if you kind of would have flipped the script. And then Sergio getting that final, finally gets that. And the Masters, the one he said he would never win. Yeah. And he somehow picks up, but I agree with you. I think 2019 is the best. I think that's a close second, though, for me.
Yeah, I think if the Woods element wasn't in there for 19, you'd definitely have a big argument for 17. Even if you put a medium level, you know, or a top level player, but not Woods in there, I think 17 would certainly be a strong contender.
The other one I looked at was 2014 with Rory picking up two, Bubba winning his second Masters. I thought that was a decent one.
Yeah.
What of the last decade, though, is the worst?
Ooh, let's look at that list.
I think there's a clear. Oh, no, maybe there.
No, I don't know.
I think there's two. There's two that are jumping off the list to me right now.
Well, I think Rory was a highlight in 2012, but you know, Bubba and Webb, it's like, Duffner, Scott, Rose, and Mickelson in 13. Mickelson might have been the highlight of that one.
And well, was like, that's a big highlight.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, you're probably staring at 15, maybe. I don't know. What's your thoughts in there? Oh, I know which one you're aiming.
There's
two. You're looking at 16.
16 is trash. It's so bad. Henrik Stenson, obviously, you know, he's finally got that one. Yeah. DJ, here's his first. He's going to go on this epic run. Jimmy Walker and Danny Willett. Jimmy Walker, you couldn't find this guy anywhere anymore. And I understand, like, this guy got Lyme's disease, like, right after that, like, which is hard to fight. Danny Willett, like, the guy was at the Atlanta airport when they had to call him back to get the green jacket because he thought he was gone. Like, oh, I got it in my top five. See you later. But the other one I'm looking at is 2011. If we actually look back at those, Darren Clark wins. That's the best one of the Rory. Was this the one he blew everyone like right out of the
water?
That
was his first one. That was the one at Congressional where it was soggy and he shot 60 million under.
Yeah. Boring. Keegan Bradley. And he was battling against like, he was battling against Jason Duffner at this point. This was like this is a low of golf. Like, this is where we
all right, I'll give you that. I'll give you that one. If there wasn't Clark in there, it probably would
It'd be horrible. Yeah. And yeah. But like, this is like that, like, this is that stretch. If you actually look at this stretch of kind of 2009 till 2012, this is where Tiger was going through everything he was going through off the
One felon in there.
Yeah, there's one felon in there. You know, like Keegan Bradley's and the Jason Dufters, who we like. Duff, we love. Keegan is apparently a decent lad. Charles Schwartzel wins. Like, it just was just an ugly time for golf.
I guess we should feel pretty lucky for what happened in the last little while.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So why don't we get into role play then? I think that was fun to just look back at the majors a little bit. We're not going to have one for a while. Spray, we'll talk about the majors for a while. And we're getting it fired up when it comes next April. We have cabin fever because, you know, we still don't know if we're going to be able to travel really next year. Hopefully we are. But let's play a little role play, Scotty. We do this, I don't know, once a quarter, it feels like. Exactly. I think we need to do it more. I'm going to give you two situations. You're going to give me two situations. We got to answer as if we are the people on the other end.
Oh, boy.
You understand how this works?
Of course.
All right. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
Why don't you go first? I'll throw one at you here. You are the commissioner of the European Tour or the PGA Tour. How do you feel or how do you justify Tyrrell Hatton's outbursts all the time? And then this guy just, you know, just snaps more clubs at the Open Championship. I mean, how do you deal with that? How do you basically sell that to the public and why that's acceptable?
We love Tyrrell because he brings personality to the game. And I understand sometimes he runs hot and I wouldn't want to teach anybody the actions he does, but he's important to English golf. He's one of the stars of this game that we believe will be around for a while. I believe this is a major champion in the making at some point. Do I wish he would stop breaking clubs? Absolutely. Is he the first one to do it? No. Is he the last one to do it? No. If you follow groups around, you know, on a Thursday without TV, you'd probably see more broken clubs, unfortunately. I can tell you firsthand as commissioner, I've seen clubs tossed in front of me. I've seen clubs thrown in ponds. I've seen more people putt with a wedge than you know. But, you know, there's not much we can do here. We these guys make a lot of money. How much money can I really fine Tyrrell Hatton for breaking a club in the Open Championship? I can't do much. I wish he didn't do it. But, hey, it's more clicks and maybe some PIP dollars for him. So, Tyrrell, look for your PIP checks in.
Yeah, just making up excuses for him.
But Scotty, you gave me the role of the commissioner.
Oh, I know. I get it.
I gotta protect my players. Behind the scenes, if you actually want the real answer, there's no, like, the commissioner probably loves
never
it,
hear that.
But he probably actually loves it because the views, the clicks online, the social media stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is it's the golf courses, the PGA professionals like yourself that you're like, there's going to be some dumb junior that's going to break a club because they saw Tyrrell doing it.
Yeah.
Speaking of golf clubs, you are you are Cobra Golf, all of Cobra Golf, the tour department. This was an easy one. This is where I got the thought for it. How do you feel about Bryson's comments about the driver after round two? And I'm going to throw a hitch in your role play. We're at the bar and there's not a microphone around. This is where your answer. So you got to answer as if we're at the bar, you're off the record and there's not a microphone around.
So just totally the off the record one.
Yeah.
Wow. I was going the other way. I was going to give the official statement. So
no official. We're on off the record.
We'll get off the record. All right. You know what? Bryson, I get it. He was really frustrated, but you know, he's gotta be a little bit more professional. We're paying him a lot of money.
How much money?
I can't say, man, but you know what? He can't be saying that crap in public. He really can. He gets out there. So we're going to have to get out and make a statement and get out in front of this because you know what? He can't take it over
and be the guy and run the attention. We got to own the attention out of this. We got to make sure that, you know, he doesn't make us look bad, because certainly, you know what, we've done our best to create this great product. And if he wants to be an ass, we got to make sure that it's him that looks like an ass and not that us that looks like an ass out of this.
That's a good answer. I think that's like outside of like probably a couple, you know, expletives that we couldn't post on this podcast.
Probably. There's going to be more than that in there.
Yeah. There would have been a lot. That's one I felt bad for Cobra, because the tour, when they're paying those guys on the tour, it's to obviously get the product out there, yeah, to sell the product, see that your favorite player is using your product, so I go and buy that product, right? That's why right. They're out there. It's yeah. Like everyone's like, thanks, Captain Obvious. But like Bryson's at this point where I do not think anybody outside of somebody that loves to love the hater,
yeah,
is buying his product because Bryson's using it. And now Bryson's on top of it, doubling down and saying the driver sucks. Like,
he's basically jumping up on the table with a Tommy gun and spraying the whole room. I mean, he's just, you know, I mean, he's not, I mean, you know, pick your spots, aim where you're going to aim. But he was just like trying to, you know, he was like a 2-year-old trying to, like, you know, just have a tantrum and, you know, reach out and try to hit anything he could.
Yeah, guy's playing Grand Theft Auto. He's just running over pedestrians, stealing cars.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like no reason, like unnecessary, no consequences, because it's a video game. Yeah. The best tweet I posted on our Instagram account was the one where it said, like, you know, I got to find it. It like I posted a lot on our Instagram account over the last week because I thought the content early in the week,
prompted a lot by him. So and here's the crappy part. Like, if you go out, and I get it, he's got custom stuff being made particularly for him, right? But we know it's good product. I mean, they've made one of the best drivers, and some of their driver models they've had have been fantastic. The issue is that, especially as everybody, you know, talks about, I mean, if you're going to swing at 200 miles an hour with a 5-degree driver, I guess what? The physics of that, and especially for a guy who's supposed to understand the physics of it, the physics are a little teeny miss is going to go a long way off. And I mean, whether you're frustrated with yourself or you are frustrated with the equipment, sometimes you just got to shut your trap. And, you know, while we want players to be honest, there's a time to be honest and time not to be, because I think him representing it as being crappy discredits all the great work that some of the smart minds of that company have been doing, where that product is actually great for a lot of people. And just because he has an issue with it, those people all of a sudden think, oh, well, it's no good. You know, yeah,
there's a reason there's like 3 brands in long drive competitions.
Cobra's one of them. Yeah.
But they're not out on the tour a lot. Like that, with that crank.
Oh, the crank golf, and all that, like, stuff. Yeah.
Because they're not a driver you want to be playing golf with. You're just trying to actually match. The tweet, I found it here. The account is Laz Versalis. He said, imagine.
Yeah, he works for Fire Pit Collective now.
There we go. Yeah. He said, imagine playing a sport that didn't drug test for a year, then qualifying for the Olympics, for which you are drug tested, having to go off your PED cycle and time to test cleanly, then go compete in a major. Really difficult stuff. Unrelated. Bryson unhappy with drivers. And I died. Oh, that tweet won the weekend. Yeah. I don't know if people understand the nuance, the change of the PGA Tour, where for literally the first time in how long, because of the pandemic, they weren't drug tested for that year. And we don't know what effect that had, but there's been rumblings behind the scenes. We don't know any, obviously no one knows the official
answer,
but no one puts on that much weight that quick, that much muscle that quick without something. So maybe we're poking the bear a little bit. I'm sure he's going to have a comment about it at some point, because this guy is softer than melted butter on your popcorn. But I loved it. I love that tweet. What's my next role play?
All right. Your next role play is, you're the GM of a golf course. What services are you adding to make your public course stand out?
We're doing a couple different things here at Stefan Tiedorf CC. Yes, I have decided to name it after myself. I think there's no one more honorable in the golf industry than myself. So we've added a couple things.
We going to make for a crappy logo, but anyway.
Yeah, not a lot of hair on that logo. We've listened to feedback for years. We had women come in and give us feedback that we didn't have enough tees for us and that they didn't want tees in the middle of the fairways. They've also let us know that there aren't enough bathrooms on the golf course either, and that men are just pissing everywhere like animals and we have to hold it, you know, every six, potentially every nine holes if we're at some bad courses. So we've added multiple bathrooms. We've had multiple tee blocks. We've also added six hole loops at our golf course. After six holes, if you want to only play six holes, there's a golf cart there that you can take back to the clubhouse. If it's too far away, you can come back in after six holes. That's all you want. Perfect little courtesy cart. You're throwing it back. We've added free play for juniors after the, after 5 o'clock with an adult. We're just trying to get people to play the game and have fun. We're also going to put in a day where the pins, we take them out. We're just taking the pins out for the day. You're going to have to learn how to play smart golf by hitting to the middle of the green. We're trying a bunch of different things at our golf course. We're not just expecting people to come back just because we were busy last year. And the other thing we've added signage everywhere. You don't know where the first tee is. Look behind you. There's a sign. You don't know where the 10th tee is. Look behind you. This is a sign. We're making golf easier. We're making it more accessible. We're making it so you do not have to wait nine holes to take a pee. My name is Stefan Tiedorf, the GM of Stefan Tiedorf Country Club, as I mentioned earlier. Thank you for your question.
Okay. All right. Give me my last one.
No thoughts, no comments, nothing.
You know what? Besides, I like your elements. I like what you're adding to the club. Could you add a good name next to your club?
Yeah. Once they mutiny me out of the club, which is probably, you know, it definitely
it's
is
happen
going
soon.
Well, yeah. It's gone to my head. I named it after me. Like I take over as GM. I renamed the whole club. Yeah. But I mean, I
and
am
you have
serious.
The, and you have the red Tiedorfs and the blue Tiedorfs and the white Tiedorfs.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you got? So my face is on every tee
every tee block and on the flags too. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's so many things like it's the reinvesting. Like how many golf courses have you gone to that are the exact same, this year as they were last year? Actually, I'm gonna give you a better question. Name one thing you've seen different from a golf course. You can call it out from this year that wasn't there last year.
Ooh, I think I've been to a few golf courses where they've now got better separations on things like their driving ranges, where they've paid a little bit more attention to the spacing on driving ranges.
But is that investing more money to that product?
I think that was a COVID situation more than anything. So I think there's going to be some things that carry over from the COVID side of things. But as far as from an investment standpoint, I'd have to think. I know there has been at some certain clubs where they've, you know, they've done some things related to, you know, carts or clubhouses or things like that. Certainly, I'm not going to say there's no golf courses that are not investing back into it and putting something into it. I would suspect that you're going to see some changes in the next little while once, you know, they know they've got some money in the bank and they're going, okay, now we've got some projects and now we're going to do some things. So, but hopefully those are some progressive things, you know, kind of even like you talked about.
The problem that I'm having here is that there isn't like one thing right now that stands out. It's
that
like
jumped out.
Yeah, that jumped out. And
because I haven't been traveling around to enough golf.
Well, that is true. Like for me, what's jumped out is everywhere went up in price because they're like, I can charge more because people are coming. It's the opposite. And that's I don't want to go into it too much.
No.
We've already gone into rants about what I've seen on golf courses, not just thinking and using their brain of customer service, but just small things like those tee blocks are such a small thing where like nothing drives me crazier than the tees that are just sitting at the front of the fairway. Why can't you just build a mound over here and put some grass on it and actually make that junior, that kid feel like they're actually playing a golf course, not just a fairway. Yeah. It's just small things. And like outhouses, how much is an outhouse? Like throw an outhouse out there so women don't have to like bring their own toilet paper and squat in the woods wrapped around a towel. Like it's these small details just drive me crazy, but that's why I'm not playing this week. That's it. That's why it's nothing to do. It's a protest. All right. I got one last one for you.
All right.
And then we'll take another break. We'll hit the mailbag. We'll wrap up this episode. You are Martin Slummers of the RNA, the Open Rota. What are the chances we go back to St. George's? Not St. Andrews. We're going back to St. Andrews next week.
Definitely going to St. Andrews.
Next year. Sorry. Wow. I need a drink of water. I'm losing it after my tirade about the golf course. You're Martin Slummers of the RNA. We're talking the Open Rota. What are the chances we go back to St. George's anytime soon?
Well, Stefan, I mean, you know, the golfers really didn't like the club. They didn't really appreciate the nuances of it. But, you know, it's an important role in our industry. It's the 15th time we've had it here. And, you know, it serves a great role in golf in general and around the world. You know, they put on some of the greatest dinners ever. And the club has a beautiful tie. And really, for that sake alone, we have to go back. I mean, just look at it. I mean, go into the locker room. They have amazing service. They'll clean under your nails here at Royal St. George's. So, I mean, damn it, who cares about the golf course? It's not really necessary to be amazing. We need quality service, white napkin service, white tablecloths. It's got to be fancy. We have to go back. And damn it, it's near London. We can get in there. We can get a theater and a show, get our suit on Savile Row. You know, we have to be civilized because, you know, if we lose that ability to be civilized, the golf will be lost. So we have to go back to St. George's as quickly as possible.
Martin, just a quick follow-up on that question. Just can you remind me what country you're from? I'm really having a hard time picking up on that accent. I'm catching a little South African with a touch of PEI and maybe a little bit of like Northern England. So can you just like double down? Where are you from again?
I have a very multicultural background. I went to 7 different boarding schools and then I was off to play polo for a while. And then a little bit of hunting in the Sahara.
I hear the Australian. I hear the Australian.
Bit of everything. So, you know, I'm a bit of a, I hate to say it, I'm a bit of a runt.
Oh.
You know, so, you know, don't let
there's
anyone know.
There's that British again. Yeah. Okay.
Don't let anyone know. They might not let me back into Royal St. George's. So, anyhow, it's a fabulous place. We have some amazing, you know,
right,
get together.
Thank you.
400 pound wine. Oh, it's amazing. We have to go back as soon as possible.
Okay. The King of Africa from Australia, Finnish, Martin Slummers. Thank you. That I should have made sure you were off the record for that one too. But that, I think that is the answer. They'll be back whether we like it or not. So,
exactly.
Not bad. Not bad answer. Pretty bad acting overall.
Thank you.
All right. One more break. Let's get back with the mailbag. We'll wrap up the episode. You want to hit the mailbag, Scotty?
All right, let's get to it. Let's get to the mailbag this week. Thanks, everyone, for sending in your questions. You can send them in any week on Twitter, on Instagram, at T-Talk Podcast, at Flagstick as well, at Flagstick Golf on Instagram, too. We got a few of them today. We're going to be a little follow-up to the Open, but not so much. We got a little bit of variety, so let's get to it here. Is Louis' legacy lost? Nice alliteration by the person that sent that in. If he does not win another major.
I'm going to give you some names here, Scott. I'm going to give you some names. I'm just going to say it out. You're going to tell me what they have in common, right?
I know what the answer is going to be already.
Adam Scott.
Yeah.
Jim Furyk.
Yeah.
David Duvall.
Yeah. Do you want me just to give the answer now? Because I know exactly
No, hold on. Fred Couples.
Yeah.
Ian Baker Finch.
Yeah.
Lanny Watkins.
Oh God! Now you're digging to the archives.
Do you know what these guys have in common, Scotty?
Sure, they've won one major, and they're also in the World Golf Hall of Fame.
And they have a legacy. They have a legacy, and I think right now Louis' legacy is still being written. The guy isn't 40.
I know.
He's not.
Azinger was saying, you know, it might be
last good chance.
Last good chance. 38. Dude's 38.
The life cycle of a human being these days, people are dying. You know, how long do people live? 50 now?
Here's the thing. Phil wins a PGA at 50.
Louis is 38, but apparently with his golf swing, it's his last good chance to win a major.
So, no, his legacy's not lost. He hasn't written his legacy. And I don't even know what Louis, what would you even say Louis' legacy is? He's just a guy that's always in the mix.
Yeah.
That doesn't win a lot. He's just a very, very, very good player.
Well, considering his Open Championship was officially his only win on the PGA Tour.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think you're right. I mean, he's 38. So let's revisit this when he's 50. See what his, you know, state is at that point. But I think at this point, should he win another major to be considered one of the greatest players of all time? Yeah, probably. But, you know, he's always going to be an Open winner. He's always going to be an Open champion no matter what. And people are always going to relate tractors and beautiful golf swing to him. And if that's his legacy, I'm sure he's fine with it.
So in episode 800, we will be able to relive. We'll relive this question.
All right. Let's go to it. All right. Let's move on. Tips for playing in soggy ground conditions. We've got a lot of rain of late.
Yeah, I think, I mean, unless you're playing a match, like just play, lift clean in place, find a spot that isn't like super soggy. But what I try to do when it is soggy is I don't know, maybe you're a teacher. You'll be able to tell me a little bit more. So I try to move the ball a little bit further back in my stance, just a touch, like the smallest bit. Cause I know if I catch a fat, it's going to be a horrible result. Not even good. And then like, I just really pay attention to balance. I find like the sogginess, you like, can't rotate properly. I also try not to walk too much when it's that soggy because like your legs are just, you're dead at the end. But like from an actual swing standpoint, is there anything that like a teacher would recommend like to a student going to a tournament round when it's that wet?
I mean, low point control of where the club enters the ground is certainly really important. I've seen golfers that struggle a fair bit with that. I think one of the biggest things you'd have to do is just kind of get your feet set as much as possible, just so that you're not moving around a lot. I think that would be a big thing. So feel yourself kind of pushed into the ground a little bit more than maybe you would normally, just because you don't have the help of, you know, the ground the way it is. And, you know, I like that move as far as that ball position back, just a touch, just to ensure that you are going to make that contact more than anything. The other side of it, because it's soggy, understand that it's going to change a lot of things as far as your golf ball and the club interaction. You're going to get some lies where the ball is going to squirt a little bit. You're going to get some high launches with low spin. So just take that into account, especially for your pitch shots and chips around the green. They're going to take off a little bit higher and not grab as much as normal. You good with that?
I don't hear the teacher. I'll just listen.
All right. What's the best conditioned golf course you have ever played?
I got two. The one in Canada, you and I went and played Magna last year, or 2 years, not 2 years ago. Oh, man. We've been doing this podcast for way too long. We should probably end it. but I also was lucky enough to play Superstition Mountain down in Scottsdale area. Jack Nicklaus Design, super private. Got to play one of the 18 holes down there. And literally, same thing. Nothing out of place. Perfect. Pretty sure they had like Pro V1s on the range or the Titleist Pratt. Like, just so nice. One of the, like, very elite, very nice. Got lucky. I know you've played a ton of more golf courses than I have in the top. It sounds like we're heading to one that should be pretty well conditioned in a week here, but
very much. So your answer might change next week. Could. You never know. Best condition I have ever played. Wow. That's a big question because there's a lot of golf courses. Certainly played a lot in great condition. I would say the one that was probably the most immaculate that I've ever played on was the Philadelphia Cricket Club. Went down there a few years back for it was a TaylorMade TP putter intro, and we played one of their courses. We played the Militia Hill course. They all also have another 9-holer and another full 18. The place was to die for, and trying to find a bit of grass that hadn't been tended to was pretty hard to do. It was easy to take a lot of photos, and I don't think there was a poor lie all day. You know, they're out there filling in divots nonstop,
cleaning up ball marks. I mean, it was really pristine to the point that, you know, you didn't know if it was actually artificial or real, as far as the surfaces that you're playing on, almost disturbing to a point where you're thinking, man, is this actually, you know, am I on TV or something here or whatever, but, amazing. I would probably say that would be one of the best condition for sure. All right. On to the next one here. How did you guys get started playing golf? Wow. This could be a long podcast.
Yeah. Scott's memory. I don't know if it's pretty good, but I don't know if it goes back that far. I didn't start playing until I was 20. I think I mentioned that on here. Literally would have my buddies were going to play one time, asked me if I wanted to come, borrowed some clubs from my dad. I never used to wear a belt. I used to wear a shoelace for a belt because I was a skateboarder. Yeah, all the time. Yeah, the best belt. My buddies like made me wear a belt the whole nine yards.
Were you eight?
No, I was 20. Like I just, just didn't. What do you need a belt? Shoelace did the trick. Didn't want to buy one. So that was it.
Have you ever rocked that since then on the golf course?
I didn't wear it on the golf course. My buddies wear a belt on the golf course. Yeah. I used to just never wear a belt. They always made fun of me. I always had a shoelace as a belt. That was my first time. And then got the itch from there, had a good, it was just a fun day with your friends. Yeah. And then, definitely, I don't like to be bad at things too. So not that I'm good at them either, but I think based on me ever being a single handicap, I'm what, better than 98% of the world at golf or something like that. Yeah. That was it for me and just kind of got hooked and kept playing more and more and probably played more the last year than all those buddies that I started with combined and their problem, maybe even their lifetime at this point. So,
I'll keep mine really simple because obviously I've been around golf for a long, long time. But when I was 10, my parents had golf clubs, but it wasn't something I really paid attention to. We watched some golf on TV. So that made it a little bit interesting, but I hadn't really tried the game. I was living in Saskatchewan and we had, I had a couple friends who had their, dad's golf clubs, probably some Jack Nicklaus Golden Bear clubs or whatever. And we went down to the school field and, hit golf balls down there. I will say within a week of hitting golf balls for the first time, I did smoke a friend right in the foot with a golf ball, and realized quickly that, man, these things really hurt when they hit someone. And then we progressed it from there. We got tired of hitting golf balls in this field. And, we convinced, one of our parents to take us over to this golf course in a town nearby, not far from Humboldt, Saskatchewan, actually. It was 9 holes, sand greens, had a slough out there. If people have ever been to Saskatchewan and know what a slough is, it doesn't smell so good next to a pig farm, believe it or not. I could probably hit the ball 100 yards and probably rolled another 100. So I thought I was decent. And we paid $3 in the honesty box. And we went back a few times that summer and I was sort of hooked from there. And then, progressed to basically getting my own clubs and used to hit the golf ball in the backyard when we moved to Nova Scotia. And then, within 5 years, I was playing golf all the time. And, that's how I really got started. All right. On to the next one here. Best trophy among the men's majors. So
that's a quick answer.
Which do you like?
Love the PGA. It's the Claret Jug. Just because
it's got the piece on the top.
The Wanamaker, right? That's what it's called. Sure. That's Claret Jug. Move on. Scott, you don't have to answer. We know.
Bingo. I mean, I've got 2 pictures of the Claret Jug in my kitchen. I do not have pictures of any other trophy in there. So that's an easy one. So although
One's the worst though? The Masters one's the worst.
Do you think so?
It's horrible.
Why? Because it's the silver model of the clubhouse?
Yeah.
I was going to say it's my second favorite. So
we're not ranking them. We're not doing it. Let's go.
All right, let's go. All right, last one here. We always ask for something maybe a little bit ridiculous. And thank God for Brad Lawrence. He always comes up with something for us. In honor of National Refreshment Day on July 22nd, if you could high dive into a pool of any liquid, what would it be and why?
I don't have the science behind this. I was thinking just something that's really carbonated. I'm going to like ginger ale, like a pool. Like I want to see if I just naturally float.
Ginger ale.
Yeah. I don't know. Like
It's a weird question, man. Yeah, like, I never really thought of it.
I don't know. Like, I also want to be able to get out, right? And like, you know, you don't want like a. Can you imagine diving in to a pool full of Coca-Cola?
Well, I thought about a milkshake, but I thought, man,
oh god, you drown. There, yeah, right? You'd be. Yeah, it'd exactly. be like it'd be like Rod's Bog out of Rivendell. You'd be stuck. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I gotta go. Coca-Cola. I'm actually gonna go Coca-Cola because it would be terrifying. Because you go under, it'd be black everywhere, right? And like it's thick.
Question.
Yeah. I want to see him high dive off anything.
I don't know. Yeah. Brad, we want your answer too, Brad. Yeah. So yeah, let's spin it at us. You know what? I'm gonna go iced tea. I love iced tea.
And do the Nestle plunge.
Yeah, do the Nestle plunge. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to have anything else in that. We didn't say if we could have multiple liquids in there as far as, you know, enhancement into our refreshments or whatever. But, you know, given the, you know, the weather of late and the heat, I think iced tea would be pretty good. Yeah.
I'm changing my answer. Do you ever seen Last Man on Earth?
No.
The TV show with Will Forte. Watch it. It's hilarious. It makes you think about how you live. He does this thing called the margarita pool. He gets a kid's pool. He fills it up with margarita stuff. He sits in it with a straw and he drinks out of it. I'm doing that. I'm jumping in the margarita pool, covering myself in salt, diving into it, straw floaty. Let's go.
This could be a whole podcast just on this, trying to come up with theories of why to do it.
We could do a whole podcast on Brad Lawrence. Just
yeah, that's true. Yeah. We'd have to bring him back and then scrape through his brain a little bit more. All right, everyone, that's the mailbag for this week. Keep them coming, whether your questions are serious, they are fun or hypothetical or ridiculous. we'll take them all and keep sending them in, and we'll keep answering them.
Shout out to Brad, though. Just got engaged recently.
Yes.
The first time he was on this podcast, he made a joke about if he worked less hard, he might still be married. His first time around, which we laughed about and giggled about. Sounds like he's going to learn his lesson the second time around. Congrats, Brad, on that. We're really stoked for you. Just an absolute awesome dude. Can't wait to go and see him at Hamilton at some point in the next couple months or so. But he's out there coaching. You're still coaching. Let's hit the tip of the week and wrap up this episode.
All right, we're back with another tip here on the Tea Talk podcast. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the distance dilemma. We've certainly seen a lot of discussion about club head speed, especially in the last little while, both at the professional game and the amateur game as well. Lots of devices, lots of training programs, things that are out there to help you gain club head speed. But, you know, while they are great, and certainly club head speed gives you the potential to hit the golf ball further to the point of about 2.7 to 2.75 yards per mile an hour of club head speed. The issue I see for most golfers is not developing speed, it's developing their impact conditions to optimize the speed that they already have. So while many are chasing a few miles an hour to gain more yardage, in fact, if they optimize their conditions and impact with their golf club, with their driver, they would probably get more results out of it. I've got a typical example here. This is a little bit of a better player, somebody that's swinging at 101.3 miles an hour. And this is the TrackMan Optimizer. And this basically shows us some of the conditions that a person is hitting at. And we see what they're providing as far as ball speed, launch angle, spin rate, height, for an example, and spin loft, which is a number I won't get into, but it really relates to their angle of attack and how much loft they presented impact. So we'll see this golfer for an example. They carried the shot 223 yards, total 259, but they actually have the potential to carry it 247 and roll out to 270 yards. So if we look at the optimizer here, and you'll see the blue areas are more optimal, we'll see that the player, although they created 101 miles per hour, their ball speed wasn't optimized as high as it could be. We'll see their angle of attack is downward, which at that speed, we probably want to be upward a little bit more. As a result of it, they took loft off the face, so their launch angle was only 8 degrees, where more optimally it would be 10 to 13 degrees. And their spin rate was a little bit low. In fact, a lot of people are chasing low spin. This person, because of their speed, they need a little bit more spin to keep the golf ball in the air. And you'll see as well, the height, only 47 feet in the air. More optimally, they would be about 70 to about 100 feet in the air. So basic tip today is basically understanding that not only is speed important, optimization is important. So go see a fitting professional, go see a golf professional who has some experience as far as launch monitor technology, fitting experience, just to look and see how optimal your conditions are at impact. Sometimes it's not the speed that you need to be chasing, it's more optimal conditions at impact.
Scotty, great job. We appreciate it. The distance dilemma. I'm in it, right? Here's the distance
dilemma. You are the distance dilemma.
I'll teach everyone the not to. Maybe we should have that. It's like each week you teach somebody what to do, and I'll do the opposite of like, don't do this anymore. Because I didn't know.
That might be a better YouTube channel.
Probably would be. Yeah. Any final thoughts before we wrap up the week, Scotty?
No, you know what? A lot of tournament golf happening right now, so hard to keep track of everything. But also we're getting into equipment season as well. So I think we're pretty excited to go and have a look at some new goodies next week, and we'll get some content there as well. And people can look forward to that. And we're probably going to chat a lot of equipment in the next little while. We haven't really talked a lot about it lately, but you know, being the equipment nerds that we are, I think it's time to break it back out again.
Oh yeah. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Tee Talk Podcast. You'll see a bunch of stuff next week. You'll see us getting fit for some new stuff. Don't know how much we can get into right now. Playing some golf next week up with the guys at Titleist. We can't wait. Looking forward to it. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you. Major season. It's over.
Yeah. Well, men's major season is over. Avion's this week for the women.
There we go. Right. Caught me, right?
Senior Open Championship this week as well.
Brad Faxon to myself. See, I'm looking forward to the Olympics. I forgot the Avion's this week. It's a weird field. People are dropping like flies. I'm worried about it, but we got the Olympics.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to get all into the Olympics and all of that. And you know
what? Once we finalize who exactly is going to be there, because that could change between now and then.
That is true. Next week, I want you to start thinking about this now. We're going to do the top five for each other. So I'm going to go next week. These are the five events I believe Scott would be best at in the Olympics. And these are the five events I think Scott's going to be the worst at. And you can do the same. I think if we got to come in blind, we can't tell each other anything about it. And we got to give a ranking of like, if we had to compete, what do we have a chance of? Obviously, we're coming dead last in everything. But like, what do we have like the chance of like just maybe not come in dead last? I think we'll be a...
Well, you might meddle in jumping on the driving range, but I don't think that's a sport.
Thank you for listening. Have a great week, folks.